Hi, my name is Chip Spear, and you're listening to Earth Plus 30. Welcome. Not long ago, I attended a dinner where the theme of the evening was service. There were a number of speakers who got up and gave their stories about what they did with regard to service, both in their communities and in the wider world. One of them in particular struck me very personally, a gentleman by the name of Wei Tai Kwok. His story was very compelling. I thought it was really inspiring, and I thought he'd make a great guest on my podcast. He's one of those individuals that makes me think, well, if he can do it, maybe I can too. So with that, I want to introduce you to Wei Tai.
All right, Wei Tai, thank you so much for joining me today. The reason I asked to have you on this podcast, in case our listeners don't really know, is that Wei Tai changed his life. When he went to see a movie, it really inspired him to do something about our world and make a significant difference. And I thought that it'd make a really compelling and interesting story. So I asked him on this podcast, and I want to welcome Wei Tai Kwok. Wei Tai, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right, Chip. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, and as you mentioned, I went to a movie back in 2006. It was called An Inconvenient Truth. It was a documentary film created by former Vice President Al Gore about climate change and global warming. And my wife and I, after we stepped out of the movie theater that day, one of my conclusions from seeing that was that, oh my goodness, we don't have 100 years to solve this problem, maybe just 30 or 40 years. And at the time we had kids, Gareth and Shelley. They were just 6 and 9 years old in elementary school. And I realized that, you know, it was going to be too late for them with just 30 to 40 years for them to be the ones to solve this problem. Whether I liked it or not, the adults of today, me, we would need to be the ones to address this. And so that got me a bit worried. And I'm sort of an analytical type. You asked me, tell me about yourself. Well, I like to do analysis and research. And so I said, I've got to see whether this thing called climate change is really happening. And I literally spent the next 6 months with every bit of my free time going out on the internet, reading, watching videos and seeing, of course, you can read anything out there, but the vast amount of information. And my own personal conclusion was that for sure, the temperature of the planet is rising. And secondarily, that humans are very likely the cause. And I also felt there was just really no downside to taking action and getting moving away from fossil fuels, which are polluting anyways, to something cleaner. So I sort of resolved after my 6 months of research to say, hey, well, I definitely want to be part of the solution. I was very discouraged by our political leaders at that time, who was a little bit more of a drill, baby, drill type of mentality in those 2007, 2008 years. Right. And I felt like I, at least myself, wanted to try to be part of the solution. And so, but at that time, I was actually the head of my own advertising agency. I had founded and run an Asian American advertising agency. We were in our 17th year. I had about 35 employees, and we had great clients, Fortune 500 clients that wanted help to build their websites in Chinese or do TV commercials in Korean. And so that was my business in San Francisco. And we had a pretty successful agency. I was very happy running my own company in year 17. And frankly, everything was going fine in my career until I saw that darn movie, which ruined my life.
Okay, so you've got this great company. It's very successful. You have all these employees, and you suddenly have this epiphany that, wait a minute, something isn't right anymore with how I live my life, meaning your business and all those things. So what'd you tell the family? Like, what'd you tell, how'd you deal with the company and making that next step to exactly?
You know, that's a great question, Chip, because I mentioned that I wanted to try to be part of the solution to the climate crisis. And every night when I came home and I was brushing my teeth going before I went to bed, I'd ask myself, what did you do today to be part of the solution to the climate crisis? And every day, I pretty much had the same answer. Absolutely nothing. I was busy with my clients. I was busy with my employees. I was stuck in traffic, and I had every excuse, but I had really done nothing. Mm-hmm. And you know, it wasn't before long that I started to have a little bit of a moral crisis, honestly, where I no longer enjoyed going to work. The job I loved, the company I'd built for 17 years, I was there and I could not concentrate at the office. I was just thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm wasting my time here, because I felt like every night I'd have to face myself in the mirror, brushing my teeth again and answer the question that I'd done nothing. You know, and it wasn't before long when you realize you're doing nothing. Not only was I not part of the solution to the climate crisis, I actually realized that I was part of the problem because I knew something was happening and yet I did nothing about it. And so that was really what triggered a moral crisis, an ethical crisis of not being able to do what I was doing before. So what did my family think about it? And I didn't really tell my company, but my family knew I was going through this and they were quite understanding. And I realized, I told them, I said, you know, I think I'm just too busy at work. I can't like try to solve the climate crisis and do my company at the same time. I'm going to have to quit my work in my own company, which was sort of shocking to everybody.
Yeah. So tell me about that, because I think about that. Oh, I'm just going to walk out of my job. Of course, I need the money. But so you have to find a balance on your activities that where your heart is sometimes leading you and your wallet, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. I mean, if you said, how do you make a living fighting the climate crisis right there? What job do you get? That's the title is, you know, climate action or climate solutions. Well,
right.
Certainly back then they were more difficult to find. Thankfully today, I think there are a lot more options. We can talk about that later in the podcast. But, you know, at that time I did worry, like, what should I go to work at a nonprofit organization? Should I go into public service and try to work in the government that works on climate crisis? Or should I stay in the business world? And if so, what business could I be in? And I really struggled and did a bunch of research to try to figure out what the avenues were. But I essentially first had to extract myself from my own company and my job, sell my company, have others take over. And I think they were very understanding of when I told them why. I didn't want them to think this was like a lack of loyalty or a lack of belief in the business we were in. It's just my own interests had changed.
Right.
And I was worried when you worked at your own company for 17 years, and I was very well known in my industry for being a domain expert on multilingual communications. And you sort of get paid for that pinnacle of expertise. And if I was going to suddenly go into this other field I knew nothing about, I definitely was not going to get paid the same type
right.
of money. So mentally, I had to tell myself, I'm going to start over and my salary is going to be maybe half of what I could do. But I realized I had to do that. I luckily had saved up some funds over the years to just make the transition easier. But I also knew it was going to be unreasonable to expect the same amount of money at changing fields. And so I think that that's helpful. And for people switching fields, we have to adjust our expectations. The good side of that, though, is that, you know, when we do switch fields, we learn new things, we make new networks, and I meet new people. And in my case, I moved into the solar energy industry with the idea that the more solar panels we could sell, I was a marketer, but an international marketer by training. And so I could help market solar panels internationally. Then the more we sell of those, and the less we'd be reliant on fossil fuels, that the better it would be for the world. So I ended up pivoting into staying in the business world, but moving into the solar energy industry. And that was a very young industry. And I was a marketing person, so I moved into marketing for SunTech Power, which was at that time one of the world's largest solar panel manufacturers. And yeah, I think in the end of the day, I did take a pay cut. But I think over time, you can recover when you just bring your skills into a new industry and eventually get recognized for that as you build up those skills. So it was an okay transition financially eventually. And also, I'd say longer term, by moving your career, my career, into a growth industry and a new industry like solar, where there were not that many people in it, and it continues to grow. Well, guess what? Now, 10 years later, I have 10 years of experience in solar and renewables. That's a very valuable piece to build off of in a growing industry. So I highly encourage youth data to look at new industries. And even if you want to switch your industries to get into something, the growth industries of the future.
So you also, besides switching industries, also got very involved by taking training and talking to people about climate change, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. I mean, I was working in the solar industry for 5 years. And by the fifth year, I think we'd made tremendous gains in solar, dropped 30-40% in that time. And has since then, in the last 10 years, come down like 60%.
So pretty amazing.
It's lower than coal, and coal costs now. So wind and solar truly are competitive today.
Huh.
And so I did feel we were making great progress there, but I still thought about that 30-40 year time horizon for us to make significant solutions. And I did not feel as a country we were getting there. This was already the Obama administration. In his first 4 years, I was very disappointed with making no progress on climate. And so I was very frustrated with our political leaders then. Mm-hmm. And I decided that even though from 9 to 5, my day job was spent working on the climate crisis, I could do more. And I needed to do more because time was passing. And so I actually resigned from all of my nonprofit boards that I was doing for my college or for U.S.-China relations. And I decided to focus on climate change in my free time. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten an email from the Climate Reality Project, which is Al Gore's nonprofit organization, offering to get trained as a climate leader to learn how to give his speech. Wow. And his actual Inconvenient Truth presentation, that PowerPoint presentation or slideshow, as he called it, he actually 4 times a year trains the public at no charge. So you have to apply, but if you get admitted, you get free training for 3 days from Mr. Gore himself.
Oh, my God, that must have been so amazing. Tell us about that.
And that was, so I got this email in the summer of 2013 saying, would you like to get trained? And I said, gee, you know what? That was the movie that got me motivated in the first place. And they're offering me this free training in Chicago. So I flew out there on my own dime, mm-hmm. spent 3 days with 1,200 people from all 50 states and 60 countries around the world. They were people from all religions. And we sat there and learned about the science, the impacts, and the solutions to the climate crisis. And really at a time that I was as angry and depressed that our society was not working fast enough, that one conference was so uplifting. And to just see the peoples of the world come together and really show they cared to take action, I suddenly felt much more hopeful that I think if this many people care, I think we're going to do it, be able to do something. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I got trained by Mr. Gore to give the slideshow presentation. And coming out of that, our commitment, we got trained for free, but they don't want you to just get trained on the facts. They want you to go present them and talk about the climate crisis and educate the public.
Yep.
And so I subsequently started giving talks to the local Rotary Club and local churches, my local library, businesses. In that first year, I spoke to 20 groups and kept on speaking. I'm up to about 80 groups now, and I really enjoy getting out there to educate my neighbors and my community about the facts and the solutions.
So what about that? You go off in these groups, and now if you talk to like 80 different groups, what have you learned? I know you're teaching them about climate, but what have you learned about the groups, the organizations, the response the people have? How has it kind of helped you do this better?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, what I've learned is that I've been inspired by my audiences. When I hear them interested in asking questions and clarifying what is happening and what can they do, it makes me realize that I'm not alone. That sometimes if you read the media, it seems like it's a big topic of debate and that Americans can't get their mind focused on whether this is really happening or not. The people I've met actually seem to be, it's not like a 50-50 debate. It's like 95% of the people I'm meeting are concerned about it. They don't know how to take action. But mm-hmm. when they hear that and then see the other people around them saying that they're interested too, it actually motivates them to say, well, let me look into putting solar panels on my roof, or let me look at the next car we buy, whether we can get one with better gas mileage that uses less fossil fuels, or mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. better, an electric powered car that's powered by my solar panels so that I'm actually driving a solar powered car today. You know?
Wow.
And
yeah.
I love it when people come up to me months or even years later and they tell me, hey, wait, we put solar panels on our roof, or wait, Ty, we got a Chevy Bolt, and or things that they've done. I think it's just turning on the light switches one person at a time that's been very rewarding. And to see that rising level of public consciousness that we need to do something, not just in our homes, but I think as a truly a next urgent step, we need to make policy changes in California and every state of this nation, as well as at federal level, really have the policies to drive this change more quickly away from fossil fuels and to clean energy.
So from the time that movie first came out, and I saw it shortly after it did, there's been so much more that's occurred. How has that presentation or your presentation changed to fit the new realities that have kind of arisen or certainly popped up?
Yeah, that movie won an Academy Award, and Mr. Gore won a Nobel Peace Prize for his work to educate the public on the climate crisis. And so that was certainly the positive side. But the downside, or the criticism, came a lot around how like 98% of that movie was about the problems, and only 1 or 2 minutes at the end was about the solutions. So It sort of got everybody lathered up and said, oh my goodness, this is a big problem, but there's no solutions. And you know, if we fast forward 10 years, when you ask what has been the difference, I think we've seen a lot more solutions come into play. The price of solar energy, as I mentioned before, in the last decade has come down by somewhat like 60%. And so people who got a quote 10 years ago for a solar system on their roof, if it was too expensive, well, hey, check again, because you're going to be surprised How much lower it is and how much more feasible it is. The electric vehicle mode, when the Nissan Leaf came out in 2012, now Many, many car companies have electric vehicles that the price to run them is like a third of the price of gasoline. So they're better and cheaper. I think that while the first movie might have portrayed only a very little amount of solutions, I think the last decade has shown that the solutions have arrived and are growing faster and faster. And that's one of the exciting things, I think, for me, is to see that we're not just talking about the problems, but we actually need to get people focused on adopting solutions.
So as you've gotten more solution-oriented, I'm thinking, oh, that must have been the first time. It's like you get everybody riled up in a big crowd and everybody says, okay, now what? Now what? Which way do we go? And everybody's going off in a lot of different directions as opposed to a more structured approach to solving these issues or the issue, but implementing like buying cars or solar panels or community solar farms and things of that nature. What kind of impact has it had on these organizations or the people that you've spoken to from a political standpoint? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to many diverse groups, from fifth grade Boy Scout troops to high school environmental science groups to business and club. Everybody's got a different, there are different parts of the trajectory. And so I'd say on the one hand, there's always the personal action that you can do in your home, like turning off your lights, switches, or changing to LED light bulbs, or buying an electric car. These are things you control. And many people want to know what they can do. But there's like the next level up of what can your community do? Can your city pass an ordinance that requires more renewable electricity? And then at the next level, what can your state be doing to drive more solutions? And then what can your country do? So I think the audiences respond to different. Some groups want to do more on their home or the community, and there are other groups that say, no, we really need to act as a country and part of the international country. So, you know, one of the things we can do as a country is really put a price on carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. Because today there's no penalty to polluting our atmosphere with 110 million tons of carbon dioxide pollution every single day. We just pour, you know, we drive our cars, we burn our power plants, and none of us pay for that pollution and its impacts. Right. And if we could put a price on that, just like cigarette smoking, you know, if you put a price on tobacco and raise the cost of it, it will tend to reduce the amount of smoking that happened. Yeah. What we need to do with the same type of carbon pollution is to put a price on carbon so that we can use market forces, the most powerful force in our economy, to be a part of the solution to the problem, not just strictly regulation, but really use our capitalist economy, our market-based economy, to send market signals to reduce carbon use. So I've been actually really pleased that in the last couple months that carbon fee and dividend legislation has actually been introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives. And so this discussion about putting a price on carbon is actually now percolating at the highest level. So I'm excited about seeing that progress. That hasn't happened yet in 10 years. And so it's great to see us experiment with more and really try to push for more progress here.
Do you work still with the Gore organization? Is there anything that you're doing collectively to try to be more impactful, or how are you working with them? Are you in teams or individually or doing stuff? I'm just kind of curious how that might work.
Right. Sure. The Climate Reality Project has actually grown up to about 17,000 people have been trained by Mr. Gore over the last decade plus. The next training is coming up in Atlanta in March, where over 2,000 volunteers will be trained. And when you graduate from this training program, you can join your local chapter of the Climate Reality Project. So that's something new. Just in the past year and a half, the Climate Reality Project was set up 100 chapters around the United States with over 5,000 members. And out here in San Francisco, California, where I live, I happen to be one of the co-chairs of the San Francisco Bay Area chapter, where we have, we have 400 members and we have regular meetings and actions, policy. We just had a policy action meeting to see how we're going to go after local governing bodies in our region to have them commit to 100% renewables, have them work to more electric vehicle infrastructure and so forth. And there's just a lot of interesting things we can do locally in our chapter to move the needle on greenhouse gas reduction. So in answer to your question, the Climate Reality Project is, in addition to being an international type of organization, is also trying to work at the local level to affect policy change. So that's been keeping me busy and keeping me inspired. And I think that we got to keep doing more locally. And hopefully our federal government will also start to turn the corner and take more bold action on climate too.
Well, they have to first kind of admit that there might possibly be a problem before you can expect them to do much, right?
Yes, yes. But we got to just keep chipping away at it. That's what I think we've got to do.
Yeah. So what about you personally? Where do you see yourself like 10 years from today? And how are you participating in this kind of thing?
Well, I love business. And I really think that for myself, I enjoy trying to find business solutions to the climate crisis, just as over the last year, that's, you know, you can debate coal versus renewables and so forth. But, you know, the reason today that coal is being phased out, even despite support at the governmental levels, is that the price is too high compared to solar and wind energies. And so even unsubsidized solar energy at, say, 4 cents a kilowatt hour is less than 5 or 6 cent coal. So why would anybody buy something more expensive when you can get it cheaper and better? And so I'm really still motivated by the idea that if businesses can come up with the solutions, that's a path to even quicker path to our solutions than relying on our governments to do it. So I'm intrigued by energy, but this is a topic I've been working on for a decade. But I'm actually starting to explore some adjacent industries like water and food, because these are areas as our climate changes and as we areas that used to be able to grow food become parched and drought stricken and you can't grow that anymore. And I am talking about places like California where we have tremendous fruit and vegetable production due to the snow that falls in the Sierra Mountains and then melts over the course of the summer and gives us fresh water all year. That's the source of our industry and agriculture. Well, it's snowing less up there. And so we'll have more of water problems. So I'm interested in what are we going to do to get water? What technologies? Water desalinization? What are we going to do to adjust our water supply and food? How are we going to grow that? Could we be looking at plant-based proteins instead of beef-based proteins as a way of feeding the world? Because it's just not going to be sustainable to have everybody eat meat like Americans do. We won't be able to feed there's not enough land to feed the world. So, but we do need our proteins. So I'm excited about some of the agricultural technologies, again, that businesses are driving to be part of the solution. So I think that's going to be at least fun for me personally to work on in the next 10, 15 years.
There's a lot there. I mean, crickets and bugs. There's a lot of proteins in bugs.
I'll let you eat those.
No, I'm just saying, I'm not saying I'm going to eat them, but I know that there's a lot of opportunity there for something.
Oh, yeah. Those are crunchy and popular in some parts of the world. But all joking aside, those are very efficient ways of getting protein into our bodies compared to raising cattle.
Well, I actually have had a number of conversations with people on some of those topics. One, I had a podcast early with a guy about food waste. And not too long ago, I had a conversation with a guy about water. A good part of it was about California. And then I spoke to a woman about soil and the quality of our soil and how that's impacting a lot of what we're growing and what's happening to our environment, the plains and the deserts and that kind of thing. So all these things, I truly agree with you. They're all related and they all impact one another and will make our life either easier or not. And there are ways which we can definitely address them if we're just conscious about what we're doing and how we're investing and the type of businesses that we're spending our time and money and effort with to address these problems, because it's an opportunity also. People look at, well, every problem is not just a problem. It's an opportunity for something, and business can adapt and change and definitely provides many of these solutions, I think. It's kind of fun to think about if you look at it that way.
I agree with you. And I think there's the status quo way of doing business. And I think they're going to be innovative in different ways to do business and change the way we work with our soil, or change the way we raise our cattle, or change the way that we consume protein. And those are all business opportunities, which I think that will also make for a better world. It's just we have to envision that, and we then need to really drive the policies to drive in that direction. But I actually hopeful that humanity is not satisfied with the status quo. I mean, I am not. I think I accept the status quo, but I know that things can be better and must be better. And I'm always a person who wants to drive to get to the next stage of, you know, the step change of difference. And I think, unfortunately, we don't have time right now, given the climate crisis. But I thought we had 30 to 40 years back in 2006. Well, you know, the latest United Nations report from October said we actually only have 12 more years from now. And we must solve the climate crisis by 2030, or it will be too late to combat the biggest impact. So we only have a dozen years left. It means we cannot take an incremental approach to everything you and I just mentioned about solutions. We really need to be ready for step changes, and we need to demand them. We need to be doing something different in our political dialogue in the upcoming 1 or 2 years. And I think that that might make us feel uncomfortable. But I hope that we'll actually, instead of feeling uncomfortable, I hope we'll say, wow, that we're going to do things differently. We're going to really try to put the jet burners on and make some more rapid change like we don't usually do, and drive to something hopefully much better. What do you think?
I totally agree. And this Green New Deal that was put out by Mackey and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is certainly an aspirational target, right? Or there are a number of elements in that proposal that are things that we definitely need to think about and try to achieve. I've read a number of articles that compare it to what Kennedy said about getting to the moon, where nobody really knew how we were going to do it or any of the details, but it was this aspirational target that we can do it. We'll figure it out. Now let's put together a plan. Let's start working on all these little details to make this happen. And they did at that time. And in some ways, it seems to me to be a similar type of aspirational goal of things that we should be trying to do. And I think that it would be really terrific to get the political system engaged. And if a lot of that stuff doesn't happen exactly on that time frame, at least we'll be moving in the right direction so that we can address some of these issues.
Yeah, that's a great parallel to look at these 1963 speech that Kennedy gave and said, hey, could we put a man on the moon by the end of the decade? And you could see like people saying, that's ridiculous. That's preposterous. We've never done that before. This is not how things work. I sort of see the same dialogue with the Green New Deal. It's like, that's just so pie in the sky. You know, people are stepping up to say, you crazy people. And yet it's the thing we need to do. I mean, and so why not? It just like the space program, they did, in fact, Neil Armstrong, in 6 years before the end of the 1969, he did put his foot on the moon. And yeah. Why can't we do that with the climate crisis? One of the amazing facts that I've learned as I've been part of learning more about climate change and its solution is that today we actually have all the technical solutions in place to solve this problem. We don't have to actually go discover something new to be the solution, like the solar, wind, hydroelectric, the technologies we have to power our planet with renewable energy already exists at pricing that's already competitive.
Right.
And that inspires me to say, all right, so we just have to take action. It's not like you have to discover a cure to cancer and we're not sure when that's going to happen. No, these technologies are here now. So it is our moonshot, but it's maybe even easier than our moonshot because back then, we probably did not know how to get a man onto the moon, and we did it anyway. So
I had a conversation with a guy who's one of the co-founders of the New York City Climate Action Alliance, and they are helping New York City achieve a goal of cutting carbon emissions by 80% by, I think it was 2050. And he was saying that they have all the technology in place now. It's just a matter of educating people on how to implement already existing methods, and it'll happen. So it's like you suggest, we just have to get in gear, basically, and get people engaged and educated and the money targeted the right way and people doing what we all know we can do.
That's right. And I like the Green New Deal's aspiration, because I think we do need to paint a picture of what we want. We want a future that's free of renewable, in this case, free of fossil fuels, and that one that provides jobs to Americans, which we need and we want, and one that's fair from an environmental justice point of view of helping disadvantaged communities. So I think goal-wise, it's all there. And as to the specifics, let's work on it. But I don't see why the goal itself is not embraced by the left, right, and center, right? And let's just go after it.
I'm assuming that people can find out about the Climate Reality Project online, and there must be other organizations that are similar all over the place, right, that people could get involved with?
Yes, they can Google the words Climate Reality Project or Al Gore and find out more how to get involved locally. And I had a wonderful experience with that organization to educate myself and then get the tools to go out into my community. And I'm just an average person. I told you at the beginning of this podcast, I went out to see a movie. And then by accident, all this ended up happening to me in the last 10 years where I got into solar. I've gotten involved in the climate movement. I'm doing this because I realize I have to, and that it's really a moral and ethical issue for me that we need to make the world a better place for our children and to leave them with droughts and wars and climate refugees. That's just unfair when, in fact, the solutions are around. So it was a wonderful wake-up call for me. It was getting involved on this topic. And even financially, as you said, yes, I took a hit for a couple of years, but I think I recovered from it quickly. And you're in a growing industry. This whole space is growing. Do the leap and get involved. And that's, let's get out there and be part of the solution in whatever way that we can. That'd be my appeal to my all of us out there.
Well, Weitai, this has been great. It's such an inspiring story. Going to see a movie and then changing your life because of it. It doesn't happen every day, but people that see you do it and make it work makes it that much easier for them to take the step. And I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me and do this podcast. And maybe we'll get a few more people involved and really come up with a solution or more solutions.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Chip.
Yep. And we'll talk again soon.
All right. That sounds great. Take care now.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. Do you have an idea for a podcast? Let me know. Visit my website. You can contact me there or send me an email at chip@earthplus30.com. Until next time, this is Chip Spear.